Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
NASDAQ hits an 11-year high. Greece continues to do nothing. And unemployment at 8.3%. We also have guest Sid Oberoi with S&P Indices today. We're going to talk to him about the VIX and all of the different products that are involved with the VIX. And he wrote a great article recently with some great links to all the different VIX options / ETFs that are available. We're going to talk about this and much, much more on episode number 249 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, thanks for joining me. It is the beginning of February, and it's actually going into the second week. And wow, what a rally we've had. It has been quite extraordinary. Almost every time you think there may be the potential for a pullback in the markets, nope, lo and behold, buyers step in. And that's good. That's a very bullish indication. It is a bullish environment. We're in rally mode. As a matter of fact, our market trend indicator that we use, which is a culmination of three different components, has shown us that we were in a strong uptrend, which is pretty much the best you can be over the last, I guess it's about a month or so. It's interesting because sometimes what happens is that you get these overbought and oversold signals that we've talked about before. Some of these you got to kind of put aside because they can last a lot longer than you expect. Just the fact that something is overbought doesn't mean that necessarily it is ready to tumble. And we've seen that with that Spearman indicator that we've talked about. The Spearman indicator has been overbought territory for, I don't know, the last 2.5-3 weeks now. But it started rolling over a little bit, just ever so slightly, and then it just stabilized. Until we see that really drop down through there's a setup line and a trigger line. Until we see that really start to move lower, you got to think that there is support right here. There is support because there is a lot of, I guess we would say the best thing would be optimism. And that started January 1st, where people just woke up and said, I'm buying stocks and I'm going after the banks. Look at the best performers this year. It's been the banking stocks. And there really hasn't been much resolution in the whole European situation. Aside from a heap of money being poured on the banks and put into the sovereign nations by other countries, the IMF, the U.S., the fact is that they still have massive problems, and they're still being downgraded. Last week, we saw Fitch downgrade a bunch of countries. So now, the fact is that the optimism obviously has to be questioned. Is it warranted? Well, we can look at things like the economic surprise indicator, something that we've tracked and we wrote about in this quarter's economic commentary and review for our clients of the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy and for Horowitz & Company's Global Allocations. And one of the things we did was we studied this whole economic surprise index. Essentially what it is, it takes a look at what were the expectations by analysts and economists and what was the actual numbers. And when you see that an analyst is wrong to the downside, so in other words, you see a number like they estimated 2 and it comes in at a 9, which is good, well, then the surprise index goes up. And oftentimes what you'll see is that markets, which are forward-looking, will oftentimes be ahead of the curve. So what we did was we actually lagged it or offset the market, whether it's the United States, Japan, Eurozone, anywhere, emerging markets, and we offset it by 3 months to see if there is any good correlation where we can find that when the economic surprise index and the various equity indexes are way off, when they're correlating, where there's a gigantic differential. So, for example, if you see that markets are just way up and really moving high, but they are also at the same time, you're seeing the economic surprise index much lower comparatively, and the range starting to spread and dropping, You have to wonder if there is a situation where there is too much optimism going on. At the same time, when you see markets kind of just falling over and rolling over, but the economic surprise indices start moving higher, well, that could be a sign that we're ready to kind of run the other way on the upside. Now, think about that for a second, because really what is involved with investor sentiment is all about, did we meet or beat or did we fail expectations? Look at this quarterly's earnings numbers just to be, just to kind of put it right where we are right now. Many companies are beating their estimates, particularly on earnings, not so much on revenues, but beating their estimates on EPS, and investors are rewarding them handsomely. Now, really, you have to look at, well, what are they beating? Well, we know that over the last 2 months, analysts have been really dropping their estimates dramatically. Okay. But at the same time, now we have a beat. But how long is that going to stay? We have to see consistency of upward trending earnings for stocks to do well over time, because that's really the bread and butter, the meat and potatoes of what stock is all about, the earnings, the opportunity for them to make money over time. So just beating earnings isn't good, but it is good in one respect, that if we had analysts estimating in earnings of, let's say, 10 cents a share, and investors took down the stock and already had come to the conclusion that, well, the right price for the stock based on the new estimate is this, and all of a sudden they beat, well, you get rewarded. Now, mind you, you have to think about even those stocks that missed are being rewarded lately. Look at Amazon. Amazon went down for one day, went down about 9% after they came out with miserable numbers. Outlook was questionable, and they really, it doesn't look very good. Margins were questioned. Revenues were definitely low. Meanwhile, 2 days later, they took back not all, but a good chunk of the losses. Why? Well, markets were moving up, and people just putting money into indices, et cetera, and Amazon's a nice chunk of the indices. This has happened time and time again. We've seen a stock last week, Acme Packet, APKT. We talked about this company. They came out about 2 months ago or so and came out with an announcement that they're not only going to miss, but they are guiding much lower than they anticipated. They see a lot of softness in their area and having a lot of problem getting payment, and inventories were up, et cetera. Well, they come out with earnings. Stock has halted. They're 2 cents lower, and they're much lower on revenue than expectations, even on the lowered guidance that they had provided just a month ago, 2 months ago. Stock has halted. Opens up 15% down. In the after hours, it's trading down, 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 down. Now, we were looking at that like, huh, that's interesting. That probably warranted for some of that down, but maybe not all of it. There was clearly a support zone, we'll call it, that was very, very much that line in the sand. You look at it and you say, yeah, there's a lot of support down there. Matter of fact, we tweeted that and said, hey, if you can pick the stock up here, there's a good chance for a bounce. Well, lo and behold, not only did it bounce, but it ended up, the next day after the open, it kind of was down all throughout the after hours on the earnings report. The next day, after the information was reviewed and sliced and diced and management call was digested, stock was up 9.5%. They missed. Now, maybe it wasn't as bad as they thought it would be. Maybe it was just because the stock is so low already, it was beaten down, that short said, you know what, enough, I'll take my profits. And that just started a big short squeeze. But that was pretty good. And knock wood. Our number that we came out with was within about 30 cents or 40 cents of the actual, about 1% of the actual downside. So you could have picked that up and you would have made about 22% on that. And we're going to talk about that in a second. We'll talk about the trigger point research and the tweet week that we're doing and how that's doing so far. Hopefully you're following us. That's at Andrew Horowitz, and you can follow me on Twitter. Also, I'll lead you over to, once we finish tweet week, the new product that we had talked about. There's a variety of different things we're doing, but one of them is an alert system that gives you breakups, breakdowns, setups, short squeezes, a whole host of different things. And that's going to be done through SMS and email and Twitter. And we have we'll call it the light version, where we'll just be putting up things here and there. And that's at Trigger Trading. I'll put that on the Twitter feed as well. And we'll put that throughout the website on the Discipline Investor. But you should follow that, because we last week was pretty good. I'll go over that in a second. But when you look at what's happened on the economic surprise, the U.S. is really surprising to the upside. Look at the jobs number. 200 and plus thousand. Wow. That was not at all anticipated by even the most optimistic of analysts. I thought from all the numbers that we saw with regard to ADP, with the manufacturing ISMs that come out with their employment numbers, with the numbers that we see on initial claims, I was thinking somewhere about the 120 range. And lo and behold, I mean, we get this whopper just out of nowhere. Amazingly surprising to the upside. Now, there's some discussion that's going on that, well, you know, there's this seasonality adjustment that's going on. Yes, that's happening. As a matter of fact, there was some discussion by Zero Hedge and a few other folk that said, you know what, you got to be careful this number because there's no way this makes any sense. If you look at the arbitrary amount of seasonality adjustments in the millions that were put on over the last couple of months, well, you got to question the number. You also got to question when the election year issue, and you got to question this. And you know what? Fine, let's question it all, but right now let's take it for what it is. Take it at face value, because most investors will. If you want, you can fight the tide and just be out, be short. Okay, fine. Now, there's nothing wrong with being short a few stocks here and there and maybe hedging a little bit, but you know what? You don't want to fight the tide right now until you see the actual turn. So when you're looking at the negative side of things, and there could be some real meat to that, some real substance behind that, and we'll see that over the next several months. But at the same time, right now, what investors are seeing is the headline, 8.3% unemployment rate. Now, again, to debunk that, you can look at the various folks who said, you know, 8.3, but that's because the labor participation rate has shrunk. A lot of people are out of the labor force. Yes, that's true. We talked about that many, many times. But at the same time, you have to look at what is the headline number going to be when they see that in Asia, when they see that in Europe and Latin America and here. You know, if you think about when you see economics, think about this. When you look at economics and earnings of other countries, oftentimes as an investor, you're not going to really dig down deep into the number because it's pretty difficult to understand their methodology. So what you're going to take is the headline numbers. Well, look, Japan's employment numbers are looking a little bit better. That's good. Their output is good. Okay, great. But here we take it, we smash it, we dash it, we just whack it up, and we come up with what all the possible bad things or good things are. You know, there's those that will come up with the silver lining and those that will always try to debunk something. Right now, I'm not saying just blindly and just follow the herd, but you know what? Trends do, well, trend. So whatever it is, whatever the reason is right now, maybe we're getting a lot of business because a lot of folk don't want to work with the problems with Europe. Maybe there is the idea that when you look at the best markets over the last year or so, the U.S. markets, the Dow, the S&P, have been the best in the world pretty much on definitely in the developed markets. And the fact that our Fed is keeping rates low. Well, as a foreign investor, you may say, what the heck? I'm putting my money over there. So that's one of the reasons you're probably seeing this continual buy the dips and support in the markets right now. Good. That's good stuff. I have no problem with that. At the same time, though, I will share with you a few things that are kind of weird, kind of concerning. This whole Greece thing is getting just more than distasteful. It's obnoxious. Each day we hear, hours away, things are looking good, much progress made in the negotiations of the Greek debt. Now, remember, we went from 20% to 50%. Now we're talking about a 70% haircut. The ECB is questioning whether they're going to take a haircut or not. They're doing some really crazy things by selling their debt to the IMF at what they paid for it, and then they're not going to take any losses, and it's a mess. It's disheartening that they have to go to such measures and such, you know, if it was done in corporate America, it would be illegal. No question about that. So now you have to look at what's going on. Well, over the weekend, guess what? Hours away, days away. You know, already they walked away from the table again and said, you know what, they can't come to a decision because the individual bondholders don't want to take a 70% haircut and at the same time allow the ECB to get 100% of their money back on the discounted bonds they bought. Who could blame them? They went in with good faith. They went in with insurance. We've talked about this several times, and when DAS comes, we're going to talk about this a little bit more because I want to understand how this is going on and how they're getting away with this. And will they get away with this? I think that's an important question that we have to ask. Because right now, all that we're hearing is rhetoric out of Greece, and it does look like the ECB, the EU, is going to put extreme pressure on them to have increased austerity And I don't think anybody really trusts them right now. The $140 billion euro tranche of bailout that's supposed to be coming, Germany's saying, you know what? No way. You didn't get your house in order. You're supposed to get your house in order. How often are we supposed to believe that, yeah, just give us the money and we'll get it set? I mean, something's not right either. They're in a much bigger hole, which is unimaginable in Greece because, you know, the economy is just so big and the amount of money they're taking in is just extraordinary. Or, I don't know, they're taking the money and doing something else with it because they're not fixing their problems. The situation is getting worse and worse. They're getting more and more towards a black hole of finance and economics there. Just nothing is going well. We saw that the employment rate in Europe ticked up, manufacturing ticked down, but still the euro is kind of hanging in there again. You know, there's all these contrary indicators going on. We saw that in China, their PMI, their manufacturing looked better, but meanwhile, all the preliminary numbers looked much worse. It's kind of crazy. So the official, quote-unquote official, for those of you and us who believe the Chinese government is providing us with the most clean data, right, unadulterated, it came in better. Well, that was a boost for the whole world. That was great. Meanwhile, Japan, the yen keeps on going up. They keep on barking about intervention, and they're not doing anything about it. And the fact is that that's just not going to happen. What we have to really be concerned about right now, if there's anything, is this whole Iranian situation with Israel. And Israel looks like they are going to be on the offensive. And I got to tell you, I'm surprised. Israel generally is not a first strike type of country, although they have a lot of jabbering, a lot of feather ruffling and saying, you know, if you do this, then that. But they're really getting quite aggressive here in this. And that's really, you know, worrisome for the price of oil because that, you know, the Middle East and what's going on there is just a powder keg and anything can ignite it. And then there goes the oil. Iran already is causing all sorts of problems. Oil at, you know, close to 100 at this point. And that's pretty interesting, especially because we saw the inventories really start to swell. Gas prices are, as anticipated, going up. Great plan. We talked about this at length, and I wrote about this. The great gas scandal, what happened recently by them drawing down oil, bringing up the prices, refining, and making all sorts of gas inventories available, keeping prices down, then wham, right in the kisser. I think we saw about a 30-cent increase in the average price of gasoline recently. You probably noticed it. So that's kind of what's going on there. Now, we'll talk about the NASDAQ for a second. I want to mention this. You know, one of the interesting things about the NASDAQ at an 11-year high, you know what you want to say? It's only one thing you can say there. Thank you, Apple. I mean, Apple, since that time, has been a major component of the NASDAQ and the NASDAQ 100 in particular. NASDAQ 100, it's a 20% position in Apple. Pretty impressive. So, really, when you look at that, I think that, you know, that's a big part. But the NASDAQ, the technology has really been quite incredible. And again, going back to a discussion we had about a year ago, one of the big things that's happening and why there's going to be a structural unemployment situation. And by the way, maybe if you haven't thought of it, 8.5% unemployment rate is not good. When we were at that point a year ago, a year and a half ago, or when it first started, I guess it was about two and a half years ago, people were freaking out, 8.5, oh my God, now we're happy. Now we're happy, it's 8.3. It's getting better. Yeah, but still, the number is not good. Now, hopefully with the presidential election coming up and with all the things that happened to make the incumbent look as good as possible by the incumbent, well, hopefully we'll see a much better situation going on there. I want to get to our guest and talk about the VIX, because this is something that's been really interesting, that the VIX is, just down and down and down. And surprisingly, with all the things that are out there that are concerning. And then I want to talk to you about the trigger point alerts that we have. And I want to tell you kind of some of the things that we did last week. There's also a post that's going up about all the trades that happened last week. But before we do so, I want to mention that if you haven't done this yet, this is so cool. The GoToMeeting HD Faces, if you don't know what I'm talking about, this is where you're able to, well, kind of really personalize the whole experience with GoToMeeting. You know, sometimes with meetings, when you do them on a GoToMeeting or a platform on a computer, basically you don't have the opportunity to be able to talk at somebody with somebody. It's just more of a screen. Well, that's why I'm recommending GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It lets you meet face-to-face from anywhere in the world. That's what it does. And basically, you can use this. This is by Citrix. You know them. You just take a webcam and click the collaborate in group and get that HD video. Plus, GoToMeeting is so easy to set up. It's unbelievable. Just a couple of clicks of a button and you're done. So we use GoToMeeting here. I think it's great. So start hosting your own face-to-face online meeting today with GoToMeeting, and my listeners can get 30 days free. Now, don't wait for this special offer because it's not going to be forever. Just go to GoToMeeting.com. Try it free. Button is on the top. And use the promo code podcast. And be sure to make sure to use that promo code podcast for this special offer. So there we are. So after we get back from our discussion here, when we have with Sid Oberoi, we're going to have a final kind of review of a few of the stocks that we had been talking about and a couple of ideas that I have for you. So stick around and let's get this all set up. All right. So, you know, we've been talking about this whole idea of the VIX for a very long time. And I thought what would be really cool is let's get a little bit deeper into the discussion of what is the VIX and what are some of the vehicles that we can use to maybe, you know, to invest in it. And if it's even a good idea at all. So what I thought, we'd go right to one of the guys that really knows this stuff. His name is Sid Oberoi. He's with S&P Indices. I also think that he has a good degree of knowledge in the on the Chicago board and all that. Sid, how are you?
Good, good. How are you, Andrew?
I am great, thanks. Tell me a little bit about the VIX, the general concept of it as a we'll call it as a vehicle, as an instrument, as a measure.
Yeah. So VIX, which is commonly known as the fear gauge, is a 30-day implied volatility calculation on the options it's based on S&P 500 options.
Right.
And what it does is it basically looks at the implied vol off those options to come up with a number. It's basically a volatility or a standard deviation, but it's an implied standard deviation as opposed to a realized vol number.
Okay, for those of us in the back seats that don't understand what implied versus real and what the word vol, which is volatility, by the way,
yeah.
You know, explain to me the differential, because when I think about volatility and when I think a lot of people think about that, they think, okay, well, it's up and down, up and down. Let's say if it's a 2, it's 2% up, 2% down. Now, what's the difference between implied and real?
Well, realized volatility is what you see in the market. So it's a look back. It's a historical view of the market. What has happened in the market? Implied vol, on the other hand, is an expectation of the market.
Right.
So when you look at the VIX number, which is the spot value of VIX at 23, that means that the market expectation, based on how the options are priced, is that 30 days from today, the market expects the volatility to be about 23%.
Now, sometimes you hear people talk about how we'll just leave the number 23 just for our information and examples. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you hear people talk about how, with regard to a number like 23, that over the next 12 months, there's the expectation that the markets will have a 23% move. That could be 12% up, 11% down, or any kind of other number. I never really got that as a real actual viewing of that. Do you? I mean, does that make sense? No, right?
It's just a point in time expectation of the market. So, you know, does that mean that, you know, a year from now, the market, you know, the volatility in the market is going to be, you know, 23%, or would have been 23% for the previous 12 months? No. But it's just a view of the market at that point in time, you know, and that's why VIX is calculated on a real time basis, because even in a given day, the market expectation of the volatility can change depending on a number of different factors. Right.
Now, before I forget, by the way, I want to mention something, because there is a new blog. It's at CBOE, right? And S&P, where do you, because there's a lot of good stuff you talk about the VIX and some of these options. I just want, because I'll forget, tell everybody where they can kind of look at that.
Yeah, absolutely. So S&P and CBOE jointly created a blog called S&P VIX Views. So the ticker, the URL is www.spvixviews.com. And on that blog, you will find, you know, commentary from S&P folks, from people at CBOE, as well as there aren't any today, but there will be in the near future some commentary from some of the other product providers, as well as other sort of
traders,
speakers, other experts in the volatility space.
So you put out a great blog post last week or sometime, and one of the things that you did was you said, okay, like, hey, here's the deal. You got the VIX. You could buy the option. You could buy the piece here in the ETF, at the ETN. Look at the different options that are available. I don't mean options, choices that are available. And you put out a great spreadsheet, and there's, I don't know how many there are, but there's got to be, I'm picking a number.
43. 40. At that time, it was 43 globally.
There's 43 different VIX products. Some are more heavily traded, some are leveraged, some are not leveraged. Some of them are ETN, some of them ETFs, et cetera, et cetera. Now, yep. I want to back up for 1 second because I want to talk about that, but I want to talk about this whole idea of commodity, because we're talking about commodities, right, and options. The commodity ETFs, the concept of this, you have a copper ETF, you have a, let's say, I'm just picking this out of the air here, an aluminum ETF, which isn't out yet, but could be. I don't think it's out yet. And then you have steel ETFs, and you have all these different commodity ETFs. Now, does that necessarily, in your opinion, go against what the concept is, that the commodity for use structure, food-based, et cetera, is now being bought on speculation, but beyond basic speculation of trying to hedge, which was the original use of these, but is now being able to be bought by individuals and hedge funds and money managers and whoever wants to very easily at, you know, $1,000, $500 without any kind of knowledge of futures?
Well, you know, you raise a very good question, Andrew, and I think that, you know, at the end of the day, most of these ETFs, most ETPs, I will use a generic term to sort of get away from ETFs versus ETNs. Most ETPs, can be used as investment vehicles. Some may not be, but just because of the sheer structure of these products. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, some of these are designed to be trading products, while others are investment sort of longer holding period type products. So that's one thing that I think investors need to think about and consider when they're identifying what products to buy. More specifically, I think the question that you raised about commodities, there again, I think there are a couple of things that need to be taken into account. There is the whole, these ETPs, whether it's ETN or ETFs, can be either futures-based in the commodity space or physical, meaning they're actually buying the physical. For example, GLD, which is sort of the predominant gold ETF out in the market, they actually have a vault where they store gold. You could have ETPs where they're not buying the physical, and they're using either futures or some other derivative instrument to get exposure. So I think those are the things that an investor needs to look at when they're buying.
Right, one of these. Now, here's the interesting thing,
one
though.
One of these products, yes.
Is this the tail wagging the dog? So you talk about that there is a vault, there is somewhere, this giant place with just huge amounts of gold because GLD has crazy amounts. The individual buyer usually wouldn't be able to buy a brick or bar, we'll call it, because that was, I don't know, what is that, $800,000 or so for a bar? So
I don't even know what the price
give or
is.
Take.
Yeah,
give or take.
Exactly.
Give or take a few hundred thousand. So yeah. The thing is that The individual wouldn't usually be buying that, and it's really very difficult to buy any physical gold unless it's a coin, et cetera. Now you have the availability of buying one share, two share, three shares, and that adds up. Does that just in itself, the people that are mining gold say, ha, ha, how great is this? We just have this like enormous amount of supply that we can now offload. Now, I mean, the concern is now you add that to the other funds that maybe have derivative of sorts, whether they're, you know, swaps or they're going to be futures involved. And, you know, what's going to happen when, in fact, one day, if one day we keep on doing this and buying all this gold and we put it into the vault and one day there's a lot of selling having to happen. Isn't that going to you're thinking, wait a minute. Well, who's going to buy this stuff? And where are the buyers when you start amassing this much gold?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that in terms of the, I don't know that people are really, you know, or at least I haven't seen people get that bearish on gold in the last, you know, few years.
Well, because the governments are printing money all over the place. Why should you be bearish on gold? Right. I mean, for goodness sakes.
That's right. And so, you know, yes, in the scenario where you had equity markets all, you know, the next boom period globally for equity markets, I'm not so sure that you're going to see huge redemptions coming out of either GLD or IAU or any of those the other gold-based ETPs. So, you know, so the risk is there, absolutely, and that's and I think you've hit the nail head on that. I think the investors do need to understand and identify all the risks prior to making, you know, any of these investment decisions. And again, the investors also need to think about how, you know, what their view is, you know, how long of a view they plan to take on each and every instrument that they hold in their portfolio, right?
Right. No, I agree.
And that sort of, let me just sort of go back to the VIX, for example. You know, each of these products, as I mentioned in my piece, each of these products is different in structure and in what they actually hold. So they could own futures, but they can also be swap based. They could be only futures, or you know, there are products out there like that track the S&P 500 dynamic vector index that provides an allocation to the 500 along with an implied vol hedge, either using the S&P 500 short-term VIX futures index or the midterm VIX futures index, and there's a product based on the short-term version thereof. So again, investors need to understand what are they buying and what is their holding period. Again, right. Most of the VIX products, I would say, are trading vehicles and should not be considered as sort of longer-term investment holdings at all.
Right. And
but again,
I totally agree with you because you could get kind of whipsawed here, or you could actually not only get whipsawed, you can kind of get hurt pretty bad. I mean, we look at, you know, we've actually used some of these in our portfolios with absolutely abysmal results. But on one hand, that's good because the other stuff is going up nicely in our portfolio, right? So, in other words, we use this as a bit of a hedge, but we hold it. I mean, we'll hold it for a period of time, but I agree with you. It's not something that you want to hold for a year, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, you want to hold it for a short-term period of time, some are trading. I think the big thing, though, and that I really want you to also discuss about these is, you mentioned things like swaps, you mentioned futures and options and all that. Now, if you're listening right now and you have no idea what that means, you know, what's the difference? Then you really need to question why are you buying whatever it is that you're buying or selling in terms of these VIX ETFs, right? Because there's something that's embedded in a lot of these, not all of them, but a lot of these ETFs that deal with commodities that is considered what they call the roll risk. So can you explain that a little bit?
Absolutely. So, you know, so the roll risk basically appears in financial, in the futures markets. And basically there are two risks associated with you know, there's the futures markets are either in contango or in backwardation. As it pertains to VIX, basically our short-term index, the short-term VIX futures index, is in contango about 77% of the time. Then what does contango mean? It basically means that you're selling a shorter dated futures contract and buying a more expensive contract. So you're selling cheap, buying more expensive. So therefore, you're basically losing money on a daily basis because of, as is the case with the S&P 500 short-term VIX futures index, that rolls from a one-month contract to a two-month contract on a daily basis. And so what you're doing is you're basically losing a little bit of money every day as the contracts roll from the short from the 1 month into the 2 months. Backwardation is the exact opposite, where the longer dated contract is more expensive than the shorter dated contract, and so you're making money every day. But the market is mostly the shorter dated market is mostly in contango. I think one of the numbers that we've run here is that over the past few years, it's been in contango 77% of the time for the short-term index, and for the midterm, it's 64% of the time.
Yeah, I mean, so that's why if you're going to hold it more than, I'm just going to pick a daytime, period. If you're going to hold it more than, let's say, a couple of weeks, if you're going to hold something here, you're going to start running into a situation where you're going to have a little bit of bleeding each and every day that is almost guaranteed. Not only do you have the expense ratio involved, but you have this potential roll risk that's going on. So, I mean, so the roll risk is small. It's not a big piece. It's not gigantic on a daily basis, right? But at the same time, you have to realize that you start going out and you start investing in this as a buy and hold investment, you're going to lose, right? Well, potentially.
Well, I'm not an investment advisor, so I cannot give investment advice.
Here we go. You'll lose on the roll. You'll lose on the roll. How's that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would just say that yes, if you went out and bought a shorter dated contract, and every day you were selling a shorter dated contract, and you were holding it for a 2 week period, and you were selling every day a little bit of the shorter dated contract into a longer dated contract, you would lose. Yeah. A little bit every day.
Right. Now, these have become very popular of late, haven't they?
They have, and I think our view is that that's largely attributed to a lot of institutional demand for these type of products and the trading community, and these products, like I said, they're trading vehicles, so the assets tend to fluctuate.
Yeah, flow. Because some of these have pretty small assets. We're talking about 10 million here, 8 million there. I mean, some of these are really light.
And some of these are very new products, right, too. So, and like I said, the structures are different. So people are more comfortable with certain types of structures. Plus, in most exchange-traded products, the first to market is sort of key as well. So, right. So VXX and VXZ were the first two products to market, they've had significant assets.
It depends on what it is, but it could be almost $1 billion. Well, what we're going to do? We're going to link to your blog and put the information about this particular post that you put up with all these great information on the various VIX. Anything else that you could think of in terms of the VIX? What do you track? The long-term nature of the VIX, and we've seen a lot of volatility in that. In other words, a lot of variability in the rate, in the amount. And again, do we seem like in your opinion, from what you've seen over time, that the VIX came down very sharply recently, or it came back to normality recently?
I think in the last 30 days, the equity markets have obviously done fairly well. VIX is obviously negatively correlated to the equity market. By default, you're going to have, VIX going down where equity markets are going to go up. But it's also it's also an indicator of this market sentiment. And if the market sentiment changes towards the positive, then I would say you're going to see that reflected in the VIX values as well, where the VIX would probably, come down as well.
I hear you. Well, I want to thank you very much, and Sid, we'll make sure to get you the links over there so everybody can take a look at what you're doing. And keep up the great work, because I think this is an area that really needs to be explored and to be explained to people, because I think there's a lot of misconception as well as a lack of depth of information out about this. So I think it's great that you guys put this together.
Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks. We'll talk soon. And by the way, your nickname over here is Vic.
Okay.
All right.
I think there are a lot of other people in the market that deserve that name more than me.
I hear you. All right, we'll talk soon. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, that was a great discussion. We had that nice discussion with, I'm calling him Vic because obviously he's my VIX guy now. We're going to put that link of the article as well as the list of the various VIX products that you can take a look at over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com inside the show notes for this particular show. I mentioned to you that we have this tweet week that went on, or is going on right now. And you can, if you haven't done Twitter, it's so easy. Just, a lot of people, I don't know how to use Twitter. It's really easy. It's basically just a messaging platform that you can just check on through your phone and all that. So most people know about it. What we're going to do is we're going to continue tweeting some investment ideas. And one of the ones that we had last week, for example, was APAC. And I mentioned that to you, and that was up 20-something% since we mentioned it a couple of days ago. We also mentioned, we had PPO, Polypore, that did very well. We had one short that didn't work out. We were negative 3% on the closing because we had a stop price on there on Green Mountain Coffee Roasters. I mean, that stock is my nemesis. But it did set up pretty well in terms of our trigger process. Now, one of the things we're doing here is we're finding those stocks that have, we'll call it, zones of consolidation that are starting to wear out. So you're going to get a potential break up above these areas. And these are not just simple lines drawn on maybe previous highs. This is a whole different algorithm where it's being used to look at, okay, where was the price? How long it's been there? What's the volume on that price? Who's buying it? What are the blocks in there? All these different things that go into that to see where that support level is that could be broken or bounced, or then again, where the resistance is and can be broken out. And one of the things we want to find is those kind of gaps that you can't really see in a chart. Now sometimes you look at a chart and you see those gaps, right? You see a big move down or a big move up, it gaps. Whereas the day before's price is 40 and it opens up at 50, a gap. Big hole in the chart. Well, those are easy to find, and oftentimes you'll see those gap fills when they get near there and they start moving down, and they turn around from there and break through that again to test it and then move through. Now, what if you can't see the gaps? Well, how's that? Well, yeah, the price opens up at those levels. Don't get me wrong, but it kind of doesn't really trade there very much. And then it starts moving up, and then it doesn't trade much the next day and moves up. Now, what do you have? You have a stock that really doesn't gap on a price chart, but it's really not doing anything at that price. And when the price does move, it starts moving, in this example, a move higher. It moves higher on a lot of volume through an area. So let's say you have a stock that's creeping along. There's not a lot of players playing it at the 45 to 50 range. That's a pretty good move, 10% move. And it's kind of creeping along with the markets. It's up a little bit here, up a little bit there. There's no gaps. It's just kind of like hanging out there. But yet there's not a lot of participation. So what's happening is it's really just, marking on the chart, but not doing much other things. Nobody's really buying or selling. It's just hanging out. Well, let's say that it turns up to 51. And all of a sudden, there's something that, starts to play out. And all of a sudden, it starts moving lower. Well, if it starts moving lower on volume, well, what happens is there's a gap there of participation from the 50 to the 45 level down. Well, if that's the case, we may say, hey, there's a great breakdown level if it breaks through that, because there's really no support of any significance there. We don't really have institutional support with their buying. We have a little bit of buying and selling, and those may be weak holders that will pull out. Again, it's a little more complicated than that. But what we're doing is we're trying to look for those on the breakouts, breakdowns, and some setups on individual positions. We also are working on an ETF rotation strategy for this.
But basically what you have there is the opportunity to figure out if you can get a short squeeze higher or a bounce or a breakdown. And there's a lot of, again, other things that go into that. But we did about, I think we had about six stocks last week that we had mentioned and that we had said, hey, take a look at this. And all that will be on there. Two of them were about over 20% on the upside. I think three of them were plus 3% and one was negative 3%. The one that was negative 3% was already closed. The stock went higher from there. But that we said, you know what, you could short it at this point. But if it breaks higher, there is a, we'll call it back to that no zone. And what we've kind of been tagging it here is like, you know, the difference between the tortoise and the hare. You know, they say that the tortoise wins the race over the long haul. But let's say for a second that we change the rules. Now, let's say it's a 10-mile race. And we know the story that the hare starts off and he moves and he's doing his thing and he's just, you know, way out in front. And the tortoise is just kind of moving along. At the end of the race, because the hare is so tired and all things that go on in the story, well, bottom line is that the tortoise ends up winning, which is unbelievable, especially with the incredible start that the hare had. But we're going to change the rules. We're going to say it's a 10-mile race, sure. No problem. But you know what? We're trying to play the first mile. Now, that may be a whole different situation, because for the first mile, the hare won. The hare did incredible. So what we're looking for is those, we're calling them hare zones and the tortoise zones. Hey, where is that kind of just stock hanging around and consolidating and not doing much? And then where is, if there is those zones that we call those hare zones that are just going to, you know, rock it either way. They're going to squeeze, they're going to drop, I mean, whatever's going to happen there. And these are the areas that we're looking for. So again, think about these stocks as maybe the tortoise and the hare, and you know, some stocks you want to buy and hold for a while because they're great stocks, good companies, good management, good earnings. But what we're really talking about is price here. And we're talking about those price points where there is a great opportunity for a shortened race. So these are not long-term holds, you know, 2-3 years. No, they could be a few weeks. These could be, you know, if you make 20% in a 2-week period, I think you're happy. And we try to find those situations with this. So what I want you to do is we're going to have more information about this. The website and the entire program is going to be going up in, I'll say by the end of February, I'll be conservative. But basically, we have some reports that are based on earnings, and that's more of an institutional product. But we have this new thing that's really cool, I think. And for those of you that are individual traders or just want to follow along, we'll have a, you know, there'll be a subscription for some of these. But basically, there's going to be a freebie. You know, we'll put some things here and there. In the meantime, we're going to be putting a lot of things during the next week. So make sure to follow that over at Trigger Trading at Twitter. And you can follow me at Andrew Horowitz, and then I'll give you some links back and forth. I'm going to dual tweet those. But in the meantime, I want you to make sure to get on that list also. If you want any more information about the subscriptions, you can go to Trigger Trading Research and just put your email in there, and then we'll have you on. As soon as it comes out, we'll give you all that information. But, you know, when we look at stocks, there is a difference between, you know, the idea of investing and, of course, trading. Now, some people get nervous about either or, but I'll tell you, and you know, there's one further term. It's called speculating. Now, speculating really goes into hand in hand with the idea of commodities and things of that nature, which I will tell you that, and I mentioned it on this show about 2.5 weeks ago, that we have been working with natural gas now under UNG, which I hate that particular instrument, but it's what it is. And UNG is, you know, what's happening now is there's such an absolute negativity. I mean, I don't think I could find an article or a research piece that's positive on natural gas because we have a lot of it. And we're drilling for more. Israel just found something. I saw a note this weekend off of their coast, and Exxon came and said they're not going to slow down the drilling at all and their research and fracking. And at the same time, there's not a lot of use for it here. But what's interesting is when you look at the price differential, you know, here it's $2.50 for natural gas. I mean, it's $15, $10 everywhere else in the world. Well, we have a lot of it here. That's why. You know, it's kind of like the, you know, how much is in some parts of the world. You know, look at Brazil. And I mean, they get gas oil cheaper because they have it. But when we look at natural gas, the negativity has caused a lot of
players to be very short natural gas. And even when we look at something like the euro, which deservedly needs to be short, it just doesn't seem to want to go down any further. When it does, there's a big buy to cover at a lower price. And when it moves up, it really moves up hard. There was a couple of days last week that natural gas was up dramatically. They came out with inventories on Thursday. When we saw inventories, like, ooh, that's actually down from where they thought. And that's a good thing because that has not been the trend. So, you know, the initial bounce off of the 495 level, I mean, we saw an immediate move up to about 15%, and then it kind of backtracked a little bit. We sold position towards the high, about 25 or 30% of it, and then we bought it back. And on Thursday, natural gas was up about 7% again. That was down 7% the day before, et cetera. And then Friday, there was a question, did it really, you know, is it going to move back lower? It started lower, but then it came back up. So I think natural gas is an interesting play. I think you need to be careful here. It's very volatile. UNG is one way. You could utilize futures, options, things of that nature if you really want to get a real charge out of a play. But UNG is a, I guess, broken product due to contango and the problems associated with ETFs with the contango issue, as we mentioned with Sid before. But I think that there is something to think about with that and take a look at that because, yes, I do believe that natural gas is in abundance, and I do believe that there is really, way too much negativity on there. But at the same time, you know, who knows if there's going to be some kind of government initiative to actually bring natural gas into use a little bit more here in the U.S. The other thing I'll mention is silver. Just as we're talking about commodities, we started to enter into a short silver position, so long natural gas. Looking at a short silver position, if in fact there is either a strengthening in the economics and the underlying in the United States, well, that bodes well for the dollar. If there is concern and maybe a default or is just a continuation of the nothing gets done in Greece, well, that's beneficial for the dollar. And what's beneficial for the dollar is not so beneficial for silver. Now, silver recently had a nice little uptick in the last, I don't know, few weeks. Due to the fact that the dollar started coming down again, and you know, but I think that was one of the final hurrahs right now. We'll have to see how that plays, but right now, right about this point here, when you look at SLV and the price of silver itself, we are starting to enter, we'll call it, just to use the vernacular we used before, a hair zone where if it falls a little bit more, if it falls another, let's say, 1% from here, and it does so, you know, there could be a real panic sell down another probably about 7 or 8%. So that's what we're looking at. You know, we'll stop out a little bit higher above that where there's some conditions that say, hey, you know what, there is a lot of support. But right now it looks like silver is an interesting play. So think about that. And there's a few things you can do with that. We'll actually try to find if there's a real good zone, and we'll tweet that as well if it does come into play as something very, very, you know, immediate and intense. So anyway, I want to thank you for joining me. We have lots of great guests coming up. I mentioned Fausto Puglisi for trading is coming up. Das is coming up. I'm trying to get a guy from the BEA and BLS, a couple of government people talking about what's happening with their statistics. And we're also going to obviously start ramping up a little more of a political discussion just to see what the effects on the markets will be with Mitt Romney now taking the lead in the Republican side of things. And we will also bring to you Terry Bedford and a few other favorites coming up, as well as some new guests. I want to thank you for joining me. If you are interested in investing, if you're thinking, hey, maybe now's the time to start thinking about it again, it's never too late because markets cycle. Check out the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. It's a very quick video, about 12 minutes. You can check out all the different happenings with how we do things, what we do on there, and that's over at our website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And I encourage you to think about it because you know what? There is, you know, only opportunity if you play. Yeah, you can lose money, of course, but you know what? You got to be in the game. Can't win if you're not in the game. So if you have been thinking about it and been on the sideline, and maybe it's a good time. Anyway, thanks for joining me. Check it out over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Make sure you go over to Twitter at Trigger Trading and at Andrew Horowitz. Also, you can check out all the show notes and the things that we talked about with Sid O'Roy from S&P on the website as well. I'll see you next week. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.